Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
This is an episode of Cafeteria Christian, a podcast for people who are like, Jesus, what's he all about? I've only met his friends who appear to have stormed the nation's capital.
And it begins.
No introduction needed. Let's just no dive right in.
We all know what's on our tray. That's what's on our tray. It just consumed our week. I was unaware of what happened because I took many parts of the internet off my phone in an effort to focus. And then I got a text from a friend that was like, wow, this is wild. And I was like, yeah. And then and I had no idea what she was talking about. And I went to therapy. And then my child went to therapy. And I picked up my phone. And I was like, wait, what? What? How long has this been going on? It was like I was a farmer during, you know, just in 1929. Hearing about the Great Depression or something. Yeah, it's like word had finally reached me. And wow. And yeah, I was in the land before time. And that's a strong conclusion from Nora McInerney, as usual.
As usual.
Natalia, how did you feel?
I mean, so here's me. We decided to pre-record some stuff this weekend. So I had to write a sermon for this Sunday. And then I had to write a sermon for a few Sundays from now. And I was like feeling so proud of myself on Wednesday at about noon when I finished my first sermon. Like the sermon for this Sunday I finished. And I was like, yeah, like, woo, I'm doing so great. I'm going to take a little break and have lunch and check what's going on in the world. And then I was just like, oh, what? And then like your productivity tanked, like everything just straight down. And then I was like, well, now I can't preach the same sermon I was going to preach either. Like, you know, I mean,
bag that one.
Well, and it's like the text, like the reality is the text doesn't change, but the situation in the world has changed. And so you have to be like, okay, how does this apply now? Like, I can tell you what it said to me on Tuesday, but it changed. Like, what does it say to me now, right? And that means. So anyway, I just spent like Wednesday doom scrolling and like staring at New York Times, and actually, honestly, watching Judy Woodruff, who I just have to say, like, praise. I know she's just an older white lady, but I love her so much. She's the PBS NewsHour host. I love her so much. She is just the least reactive human. I just needed her, like, she was just so steady. And I was like, thank you, Judy, for your calm, non-anxious presence in a moment in which I am neither of those things. So yeah, that was me. So I've just been like, I will say, unsurprised and still really shocked, you know, like, I think those two, and it's been a thing explaining to kids, we can get into this too, but like, you know, my 10-year-old, she's really aware of things happening in the world. We're listening to stuff, and she, you know, for her to say, she has found more compassion than I have for people, where she's like, you know, how can you blame them? They believed lies. They just believed what they were told. Like, they just believed what they were told, and what they were told is wrong. And if I believed that, I would be mad too. If I thought the election was stolen, I would be mad too. Like, that was her, you know, and I'm like, damn, get out of here. Get out of here with Layla. Your compassion.
God, oh, it's almost like she was actually paying attention during all those Sundays.
Oh,
jeez,
gosh,
Louise.
How about you, Jesse? I know you did a little Insta Live thing for part of it, but
yeah, that was less for me, more for people who I realize watch or listen or look forward to hearing my perception. So I was in a coaching call, having a great time, and then we ended, and I was like, oh, let me just browse the internet. Oh, no, yeah, I think I went to Instagram, saw my feed, and I was like, wait, what? So then I go to CNN, and I was like, yep, that makes sense. And then I was like, wow. Like my literal thought that I'm pretty sure I said out loud, wow, look at all of these white people getting away with murder. Because there's no possible way that anybody black and brown could do that and get away with it. So after that, I was like, yep, let me close the books for everything else today and just pay attention to the content and see how this is going to go out. I was also exhausted before that. So that almost just gave me permission to sit down and do nothing.
Sit down and check out. We decided, we put Ralph 7. So he's, you know, I don't know. It's like he's, and he's very anxious. He's got a lot of, you know, sort of mental health things to be that we're working through. And so I put him in my room with an iPad. God bless the iPad. I put him, I sent him to his real mother, Roblox. And we sat on the couch with our oldest, who's 19, his friend who's staying with us before the dorms open, who's also 19 and is Colombian, who was like, I need to make sure that my passport is updated because I have dual citizenship. And he's like, this is just not, he's like, there's, and by the way, to feel like you should leave the US for Colombia,
it might be safer for you in Colombia.
Yes. Right. That was just a very sobering thing to hear. And we were watching CNN, and then my husband said, no, I really want to see how they're addressing this on Fox. And I have to say that aside from letting one absolute windbag on, who was like, but the election was stolen, I was like, it literally was not. We've been voting. They kept bringing up Arizona. I was like, Arizona, as a new Arizonan, we've been voting by mail for 30 years. Okay. They know what they're doing. It was fine. Everything was fine. The results were certified, not because people are cheats, but because like the results came in and were counted the way every other election result has always been counted. And I did think that what I saw on Fox, I was actually very surprised by. And they kept saying like, this is wrong. This is a travesty. This is terrible. This is awful. Then Mitch McConnell gets on, and I'm just like, listen here, you saggy sea turtle. Like, how are you surprised by this? Like, how are you surprised by this? And also, like, it's a little, first of all, it's like you're barely saying anything. And also, it's too little, and it's obviously too late. And I think also, I feel that way about. Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham. I'm like, get all the way out of here. Oh my gosh.
Like it. And Twitter and Facebook also. Like the fact that for years, like I'm not talking about just like him as a president, but for years, this man has been using these platforms, which are not a right. Your right to free speech is that you can say what you want, not that you have access to a platform to say it.
Right.
And also there are limits to your free speech. Like there are. And so Twitter suspending his account, I'm like, first of all of his children are just as bad. There are plenty of people who are just as bad. It all should have happened sooner, and it should have happened in 2015. It should have happened, honestly, even earlier when he was saying things about Obama that were untrue. Like that, and that was also a way of this is such a slow burn. Like what we saw was like the result of like nearly a decade of this man whipping people into a frenzy that pulls at all of their their insecurities, which is maybe inspired by Layla. People are concerned that, and rightfully so, that nobody's looking out for them, right? That they are on their own. And the truth is, like, well, yeah, that's true. Like, that is historically true. And you have this, you know, very charismatic person who is telling you that, like, he is going to look up. He sees the truth, right? And he's going to be the person who's looking out for you. Meanwhile, he's doing, like, everything except that. I can see where that would be really, really intoxicating. And when you even see a bill come through, like the bill that may give people like a paltry check after we're all like sort of, you know, dangling on the precipice of financial ruin, and there's billions of dollars for defense in it. Like, it is a bad system. A bad system. And that all that sort of disenchantment is going to come out in some way.
It's just frustrating because, like, I think this is what, so my like main takeaway, well, there's lots of takeaways, but I will say, like, I was unsurprised with stuff happening. I was unsurprised with all the white guys with guns being so excited to be there and being just like, you know, it's school shooters, all these people who are radicalized. It's never people of color. It is always these young white guys, all of these guys being like, hey, we made it in, you know, you're just like, I know that guy. We've seen that guy. Like, we knew this was coming. It wasn't surprising. What really got me so, it was the connection on display. So I will say, like, it's always been there. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say like this was brand new information, but the on display connection of nationalism, racism, and Christianity just smushed together in that place was, it just reminded me, I'm well aware that the church has a lot of work to do, but this to me was, you know, these people walking through carrying a Confederate flag and a Christian flag on their shoulders, and to be like, when we attach our hope to a candidate or a person, and we be like, and part of me is like, again, I'm trying to be compassionate and understand, though I have very little compassion for the people who did this, but I'm trying to say, if I believed that God was working through Trump, which I don't, but if I did, and then Trump lost, what does that say about God? And so I do understand that there's like this house of cards mentality for people to say, like, Trump can't lose because then God lost, and God can't lose because God can't lose, right? And so when you attach your faith or your perception of God to a political candidate or a political party or anybody, like, you are going to be disappointed, and then you're going to – it's just like – it. Oh, it's this we've just attached the two so closely together, like, and I think there's some real work of Christians to be like, not my God. This is not my God. This is not my faith. This is not the Jesus I believe in. This is not Christian, though maybe it is, but like, this is not Jesus. You know, it's that Gandhi quote where he's like, I like your Christ, I don't like your Christians. You know, like, that's this is exactly it. Like, this is not, and that's the thing that makes me the most frustrated, is that, like, the church has been so complicit in, particularly the evangelical church has been so complicit in this, just letting these guys rise to pulpits and positions of power and just letting them do it. You know, when Janice Legata was here, and she'll be back, and boy, Jesse, can I not wait for her perception of the past. She's coming in a couple of weeks. But just say, like, these powerful preacher guys, they're silent right now. They were there, you know, like, some of them were there, and like, ooh, church, we got some work to do. And particularly the white church. I'm like, Sam and I were talking and I was like, I'm so tired of being embarrassed. I'm so tired of being embarrassed for being American, for being a white lady, for being Christian. I'm so tired of it. I was like, I want to just move somewhere else and get the hell out of here. I'm so tired of it. And I was like, so, you know, and I'm like, and here's me, poor white lady. I'm so tired, but I'm also like, I haven't been oppressed, so I can get over myself. I understand that. But also like, aren't we all like, aren't we so tired of being like, this is not who we are? It is. Let's stop saying that and just say like, this is who we are. What do we do? Right. Mm-hmm. And like, what do we do now? Cause there's no more legs to stand on for Christians or white people or patriots to say, this is not who we are. This is exactly who we are. So now what? Mm-hmm. And particularly to me, when it comes to Christianity, to say like, oh, this isn't Christian. You're like, no, this is Christian. This is what Christians have been doing
for a long time.
For a long time.
Literally thousands of years.
Thousands of years. And this is what America's been doing for hundreds of years. You're like, mm-hmm. Listen, this is what we do. So we can either look at it and be like, well, I can't change it. So, oh, well. Or we can look at it and be like, no, we're gonna stare the shit we do right in the face. And we're gonna be like, okay. I mean, sorry, Jesse, I'll let you talk. I just got on a rant. In my sermon on Sunday, I'm pulling out this section from Exodus where all the people are getting bit by snakes and they're all dying and they're like, help us, help us. And Moses puts a snake on a staff and says, you have to look at what's killing you before you can live. And I'm like, this is what we need to do. We need to just full on Moses the heck out of what's happening in our country and be like, look at it, say what it is. Don't pretend it's something else. Don't sugarcoat it or be like, it's not that bad. Or like, this is, no, you put it right up there and be like, look what's killing you. This is killing you. You got to look at it. And then maybe we can survive. But okay, I'll step back. I got some rage left in me.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I didn't know Moses said that, but that should not surprise you. yeah, that's pretty cool that he did that. That's very powerful. That's a good, wow. That's a quotable quote from Moses.
That's hilarious. So then what does, so I'm just, I'll say my piece in a second, but I'm just imagining our listeners. So they're listening. They will be listening to this way after that had happened. What do we need to either tell them? How do we lead? Like, I'm just thinking, what do you, a week after this happens, 2 weeks after this happens, where are white people at and what do they need to know or do in order to move forward? Because that's the part that I'm always thinking about, like, oh, okay, this is happening. Got it. But like you said, like, first, maybe we just need to say, no, this is who we are. let's stop lying about that. But then what? So I did some research, of course, because who am I? Not Emmy, when we're missing right now. But
I know.
So there were 52 people arrested at the Capitol. As it pertains to May 30th through June 2nd in 2020, there were 427 arrests that were related to protests, peaceful protests, in D.C. alone, including 24 juveniles. That's just in D.C. On June 1st, there were, like, across the country, there were 289 people booked. Oh, no, I'm sorry, at the Capitol. 289 people booked in D.C. alone, which is five times more than were arrested this random day. And then the big number is about 14,000 people were arrested across the country related to anti-racism protests this past year. Yep. I don't have the stats on black and brown people yet. I'm looking. Don't worry.
And how many were arrested on Wednesday at the Capitol?
52. And they were only arrested for violating curfew.
Yeah, that means they weren't arrested on site. Like, they weren't arrested inside the build. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. Like, to think that somebody could – there was this video of a black, maybe security officer, maybe a cop, I'm not sure, with a group of white people coming up the stairs in the Capitol and him, like, just stepping back. Like, if the roles had been reversed, like, I think we all know how that would have ended.
And no, let's say it out loud.
Yeah, he would have, if that would have been a white cop or, you know, I don't know what they're called when they're at the nation's capital. I'm sure it's like fancy police, top police, and a bunch of black people coming up the stairs in a building that they were not authorized to be in, they would all be dead.
In camouflage with machine guns strapped to their backs. Like that's
it's like that, like just the blatant. I've only gotten like maybe two or three comments on my Instagram from people who are like, this isn't about whiteness. And I'm like, I can see when I close my eyes real hard, I can see why you think that. Mm-hmm. Because you do believe this is about somehow, again, because you've been told things that are so untrue, because you've also, it does feel like this feels like the result of a very systematic defunding of our public schools. So we have an uninformed electorate with people who do not fundamentally understand the way that our political process works. We have a lot of access to information that is not vetted. We have a lot of access to information from a lot of places. And so I can see where that is a recipe for not good things. And also, if you truly can watch, like, there's this one person in particular whose face just like burned into my brain, like coming up the stairs after that black cop who's like calling for backup. And I just think, like, how, if you aren't seeing that, if you're not seeing the problem, like you are willfully not seeing it. And I will be very honest. I don't know what we do. I don't know what we do about that. I mean, you know, I think Mother Teresa was like, you got to start in your home. You know, you got to start, you have to start with like your immediate circle. But then, you know, and yes, wonderful, wonderful to raise decent children. Very important job. Glad my husband is doing it. and, you know, God bless him. God bless him for taking that on. And then, you know, outside of that, it's like, I think that it's very easy to kind of abdicate our responsibility, even in our, in the circle just outside of us, right? And to not notice or to not like call out things that we see when we're like looking at like our school districts, or when we're looking at our city council, when we're looking at our local politics. There was an op-ed in the Arizona Republic, I think is our newspaper. Don't worry, I subscribe. That's all that matters. Do I need to know what it's called? Not really. And it was the op-ed basically said, like, we didn't turn blue. We turned blue in the face. And I love that. I was like, wow, yes. Like, is it blue or is it blue in the face? Which means like people got fed up enough to vote blue at the national level. But if you look down any further, red, 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 red.
And well, then I would disagree with that, but keep going.
Yeah. I mean, our state.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I mean, Phoenix is actually like quite liberal. So, but if you look at like just the outside suburbs, it's like
that's like, I mean, here we got good old Michelle Fischbach voting to, you know, it's like, she was one of the objectors and you're like, oh, well, of course she is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So part of it, yeah. If people don't realize there's money involved in these elections. So
that's all guys, I want everybody who listens to this to listen to or read the book Dark Money.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of this is about money. It really is. It really is. And there is there's one specific person, a multi-billionaire who pumped almost $1 million into the Trump campaign this year alone.
Yep.
Like,
well, and it's like the labor union, some big union that was like, we're not going to give any candidates money who don't come against, like, who don't stand up against what's happening at the Capitol. And so all of a sudden, that's why McConnell got up and Graham got up and was like, oh, this is bad. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't, like, they were threatened by losing all their funding, you know, and then McConnell could use that to threaten other Republicans to fall in line. Like, they're just,
It is. So it's a money game, one. And then the only reason why I said I disagree with, you know, you turn blue in the face, I think that there is a correlation between the political parties swinging and then the now activated voter turnout amongst other people who either identify as blue or haven't historically participated in the voting process. Mm. And so I think there's a balance of, yes, there may be some people who are changing their votes due to money, due to their best interests to get on the bus or get off. I think there's also more people who are being more educated or taking action to say, you know what, I haven't particularly decided to be involved in the voting process. Now that I'm informed or I see that things are so bad, whatever the scenario is, I'm going to be a part of that and show up. And in those places like Phoenix, Minneapolis, Atlanta, all those high metropolitan areas that actually swayed millions of votes, I think that that's a lot of what happened. So shout out to Stacey Abrams and tons of so many other dope women and dope people who did the work before the election to actually mobilize people.
And of course, like classic America is that Stacey Abrams and her team of like kick-ass women of color don't even get freaking 4 hours of credit for the work they do before white dudes ruin it for everybody. You know,
tell me more about that. I don't.
I want to tell you because I don't know if you all saw yesterday that one of the coaches from the University of Tennessee Chattanooga said some super inappropriate stuff about Stacey Abrams, and they fired his ass.
Really?
Oh yeah. Let me pull it up real quick. It's just, I told you I did so much research.
I just feel like, yeah, I mean, Nora, it's like we found out Warnock won at whatever o'clock in the morning, right? Like
I thought you were going to talk about like white men being like, we did it. That's what I thought. Okay.
No. Oh no, I just mean like these dudes took the spotlight off of her, and now all I see on my timeline is like caricatures of, you know, like extreme right wing crazy dudes with, you know, beards. And I mean, not to make fun of people with beards, cough, cough, but I'm just saying,
how dare you?
But I just mean like, they're such a caricature. And I'm like, now my timeline is full of these guys. And I'm like, I want Stacey Abrams back on my timeline. Mm-hmm. She was barely even on there before it got taken over. It's just like, of course I'm so tired of the pendulum of back and forth, like some victory for democracy or people of color or whatever. And it's just a swing back to these crazies that are like, no, I want my turn. I want my place back. You know, you will not replace us. All that bullshit. All
right. So here's how they come out on social media and at the Capitol and on the street and all the other stuff. So, Tennessee Chattanooga on Thursday fired assistant coach Chris Malone after a racist tweet in which he mocked Georgia politician and voting rights activist Stacey Abrams. I'm going to read it. Congratulations. This is his tweet. Congratulations to the state of Georgia and Fat Albert tagged Stacey Abrams. Because you have truly shown America the true work of cheating in an election again.
Jesus Christ.
Then he goes, enjoy the buffet, big girl. You earned it. Hope the money was good. Still not governor. Right.
Wow. Oh, I'm so glad he got fired. Also, there's a whole episode we need to do about fat phobia and Christianity because I've got some feels. I got some feels about how we treat. Anyway.
Yeah. So when we have this conversation, when we're talking about, because I'm thinking about our listeners again, right? There's somebody who's listening that is still not quite convinced that, like, okay, we know that these things are happening, but nobody's ever stormed the Capitol. Yeah, you know why? Because any other presidency would have shot and killed or arrested anyone who even attempted. I mean, we're talking about Bush. So, like, let's not act like this is a one-off thing, but it's not normal.
It's not normal. And also, any other president would not have gotten up and been like, you're beautiful, we love you. Like, in no way.
No way.
In no way. No other president. We've had some, like, you know, some real... not great presidents, and yet there was at least still a smidge of decency in them. And I think that's like the part that is just so, so gross is,
And Jesse, for our listeners, I think I honestly, well, and maybe I'm really wrong, but I feel like a lot of our listeners see it happening. See that it's like they see that it's race related. They see that it's Christians carrying the Christian flag, which is a whole other episode. But oh my gosh, there! I cannot believe that's a thing. Because whatever,
I didn't know there was a Christian flag. So
it's just so dumb. It's so dumb. You're like, okay, can we go back to you shall not have other gods and just be like, you carry that thing around like it is your god. It's literally the definition of an idol. Oh. But I'll, that's another rant for another day. But but I just like to say they see this. They see nationalism and patriotism, and that was in air quotes, but this is an audio medium, and white supremacy and Christianity all combined together so tightly. And I think the main question is, like, what can I do? I don't think it's like, I don't know if it's real. And maybe there are some people that are still on that fence. I kind of feel like if they were, Wednesday changed that for a lot of people. I do think that there's the question of like, I don't know what to do now. My town is, you know, for some people, a lot of our listeners, like we had when Angela Denker was on and she said, you know, we have blue dots in red states, right? We have all these people who are like, I'm the only one. Everybody in my family believes this stuff that's being spouted. They believe it was Antifa dressed up as white supremacists. Like they believe it was, you know, like they, this is the, like, they're so lost to us. You know, I don't want to say that, but it feels like they're so outside of the reality that exists. That we don't even know how to start. How do we, you know, it's like, how do you start telling somebody who thinks that was Antifa? That wasn't Proud Boys. That was Antifa dressed up as Proud Boys to incite violence and get, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, that's just not true. I don't know how to tell you it's not true without, like, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Without like insulting you, but like, it's not true. Like,
Yeah. So I think more of our people are in that boat where they're surrounded by, or they have family members, people that they love who are just lost to this. And they're like, I don't know what to say. You know, I don't know how to talk about this. I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've been, you're going to hear this a lot in probably the next 2 months, helping people move, you know, from it being in the middle, because I think that's where a lot of people have been. Like, it's just like, I don't really know. I kind of get that. I don't understand that. Like, so being in the middle doesn't help anybody. And I think that you're going to have to make a choice to believe or to support or to I don't want to say disavow, but like to cut off certain people or certain information that is not helping you move along this way. I think you have to make a decision, like you have to make a choice before you can make change. And Sean King talks a lot about that in his book. And it's almost like I was reading it and like, yes, people, because most people say that they want to do something, but when it's time to actually do something, we're talking about make a financial contribution, use their gifts and talents to show up somewhere and not protest. I'm talking about like if you're a marketing person, you can write up something. If you are an HR background, you can understand and kind of examine your policies and practices and procedures, whatever those things are. When it's time to actually make a choice, people don't make a choice. And so how can we make change if you don't make a choice on what it is that you're going to do or where you are on the side of the fence? Get off the dang on fence. I wanted to say something else.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's where you start, and then just really unpack exactly what I said. So if you are of financial means and you have the capacity and capability to give to organizations who are supporting people, who are doing this work, who are trying to change the democracy in your city, state, county, region, whatever. That's one way that you can give. There are organizations who are also trying to fight for the right. So maybe you can't show up, you can't protest, but you would love to give and support people who are doing it. Or you saw a tweet or heard somebody that was on this podcast or wherever, and you're just like, I want to support them financially. If they don't have a Patreon or a whatever, GoFundMe, reach out to them on social media or email or ask people who've like invited them. And I promise you, we will find ways to get that money to them. You can give to us. I wouldn't really ask that permission, Natalia, right?
Yeah, I mean, go for it.
You can give to us. And if you're like, yo.
Actually, if you are a part of our Patreon community, like you decide where we put our money every month.
Yeah.
So I think that is a good way to think about things too, which is like, and we're doing like Still Kicking, which is the it's two things: the business that I run, it's a nonprofit that Jesse runs, and we are doing a ton of DEI work with Jesse, who is a DEI implementer, and also runs a nonprofit arm, but it also has been like, I know that there are certain actions that look more actionable, but what Jesse has reinforced for me is that like, you really can't just jump into action without knowing where you are.
Right.
Without knowing where you are, which is sometimes not as far as you think you are. Right. Exactly. I think we mentioned this on the call before. We did a whole like DEI. What is it called? The place where you start, Jesse?
Wait.
The evaluation.
The IDI. Are you talking about the IDI?
That's what I thought you were talking about. All right.
Yeah, so we did the IDI, which stands for
Intercultural Development Inventory.
There we go. So we do that. I'm ready to get my results. I'm like, give me an A. Jesse's like, you are a straight C student. And I'm like, cool. Good to know. Good to know. Now I'm not going to overestimate my abilities. And further, like there's so much to be done within the organization that I started. There's so much to be done.
That's a podcast.
You know, like there just is. Like there is. And we have done that work like slowly. And also like we have, I think the biggest steps that we've taken is with, obviously with Jesse Ross. And there's still so much to do. And I think that being transparent about that stuff, which is what Still Kicking is working on for 2021. So we can say to, you know, the people who support our business and also to other people who are starting businesses, this is what we are doing to actually live up to our core value of equity over equality. Okay. Mm-hmm. And not to totally sidetrack this, but one of the things that Jesse and I talked on an Instagram live is what I realized, you know, maybe a year ago, it's like, oh, whoa, who can afford to work for me? Mm. Like who can afford to work at a company where like, and this is like the curse of small businesses, right? Which is like, well, you know, like, well, we'll pay, you know, and also we don't have health insurance and are there any benefits? No. the people who could afford to work for me were people who had like financial security anyways, and for whom work was not a matter of survival. Mm-hmm. And so that was a way where we're absolutely not living up to our core value. And so there are people who believe, and I am one of them, oh, I'm doing good things in the world. And also, like, I can be doing better. And I can be making these adjustments that are really not that hard to do, but they're so unsexy, right? Like, you want to be like, oh, look, we got this, like, we got like a cool office and everybody gets a computer. It's like, no. Like, how can we make sure that our staff is more representative of the world around us? How can we make sure that it is a good place to work, which means, you know, not just like, oh, everybody has like fun here and we have sparkling water, but like, it is an equitable place to work. And so this year, our everybody has access to dental insurance, you know, wow. Everybody has access to life insurance. That's one thing I tell everybody to have. I didn't make it easy for you. Now everybody has life insurance. Everybody has a 401k. Some people have health insurance because our country is fudging broken. But those are things that are not, you know, like it doesn't feel like it is as, you know, monumental as showing up and making some big change on the national level. But these things, our life is mostly lived on like a very local level, you know, like our world is made up of like everybody's individual spheres. And that is an incredibly powerful thing to pay attention to. And while I'm talking about Jesse Ross, one of the one of the most impactful things is like, okay, well, are you just doing something that you think needs to be done? Or are you doing like what is truly needed? And Jesse can say that maybe probably better than I can. But, you know, one of the questions that we ask ourselves is not just like, how does this help? But are we helping in the right way?
Yeah.
Are we helping in the right way?
Yeah. One way I say it is, are we answering the question that people aren't asking? And so often we are like, oh, so I heard this quote a long time ago that it said, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. In the sense of like, if we keep just giving out prescriptions, one, that's abuse. And what happens, you become a drug addict. But if you don't actually assess the problem and have a proper diagnosis, it's not helping anybody. So yeah, I agree with that. One of the things that I think, and Nora, you and I have talked about this a lot in different ways. So another way we talked about financially, when people are like, okay, what do I do? Financially, you can give. God, maybe that's not it, or maybe that's not as impactful. So using your actual gifts and talents, right? So what is it that you're good at? Maybe you're a writer. Maybe you crochet hats. Maybe you have a marketing background. Maybe you are gifted in the school system and you have access and relationships. Maybe you are connected to a politician. Maybe you're great at finances. I don't know. But finding those places where you can actually use your gifts and talents and serve where people need help. Right. So there's times, and Nora and I talk about this all the time. I hate writing. I'm very clear about that. I am actually pretty decent at it, but I don't like it. It doesn't come easy. And I've had to work at it my entire life. Nora can literally write a novel. Oh, sorry. In like 20 seconds. And it bothers me.
3 months. And
but like
a novel will take me 3 months. Okay.
Yeah, but like when you're good at something, it's easy for you to do. Why can't you help people who, hey, I could add this thing if it's helpful to your business, to your service, to your whatever you're doing. So there's so many ways that people can give just their actual gifts and talents. I'm a thought processor. I can think. I can literally turn like nothing into money and revenue and ideas. And so when people ask me to be a part of it, it's because they want creativity, they want strategy, blah, blah, blah. And I can say, cool, let's go. This is not going to make money. This will make money. There's so many different ways that all of us can do those things. And I think we skip over that because it actually is hard sometimes, because we actually have to go ask them, hey, Natalia, do you have an organization that you're connected to? Sorry, I didn't mean to like put you on the spot.
It's all right.
But like, do you have an organization that you know could use some writing, right? Maybe it's not on their radar, but if they had somebody to make it very easy, maybe I could write a couple articles for them a month or a year or whatever. So then you start to pair like, well, I did hear that conversation where they were like, man, I wish we could do this. Prime example, when people, when we were doing the Northside, the Rebuild North funds, we put it out to our network. People were like, oh man, this is great. I love what you're doing. Now, what started with the Business Corp saying, hey, we should leverage our audience and our products to bring money was like, great, that's a good idea and can work, but let's wait. Now let's figure out how can we do it and actually maximize the effort. So we waited until we knew, like, is this exactly what's needed? What will be helpful? And then we actually pitched the story of like, here's why we want to do it. And we probably raised more money than we would have did if we would have just threw it out there. But now we have a fund that's specifically going to, and I'm talking about for Still Kicking Nonprofit, that's going to people who are proximity related to North Minneapolis. Those are very simple things that if we just like slow down, stop, and then put our gifts and talents together, we can do it. Also, yeah. Sorry, I got one more thing.
No, it's good. I just think the slow down part is really, really, really important in a moment like right now. Yes. Where everybody's like, I gotta do something. And they fly in to help. Yes. And it's like, you're not being helpful. You're just like helping your own guilt.
Yes.
And like, just sit and listen to what people need for a hot minute before you jump straight the heck
well,
in.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Cause I think, yeah. So over the, you know, civil unrest at our church and Natalia's church and all over, like we're seeing all these people coming in from everywhere who are donating and giving money and showing up with groceries and different needs. And that's great. But I can't tell you how many white women I heard or saw taking pictures of like, oh, look at this good deed that we did. There was three specific white women who are from Edina, and I actually really wish they were listening to it because they were sweet, but so wrong and headed in the wrong direction. Oh my God, we just wanted to do something and help those people. And try to figure out what it is that we can, you know, this is one Minneapolis. No, you live in Edina. So let's not act like, you know, you came over here with a bunch of groceries and three very nice Volkswagens full of groceries because you know that you have resources. Let's slow down and just say, hey, I have money. I want to know where I can fund it that can move the needle a little bit. It's perfectly fine doing that. But this, if we don't be honest about that, how can we expect these people who stormed the Capitol to be honest? Just like Layla said, they were lied to, right? They were lied to. Layla just made the podcast.
Oh my gosh. She's going to be so excited.
So that's my soapbox. I just wish people would actually think about what's their practical gift and ability versus always like you said, running. Oh yeah, I got to do this. And if you make a choice, then you can make change. And people are going to get tired of me saying it because that's my soapbox for the year.
But that's so good. And
I have a recommendation too, which is that all of our listeners, if they have not and they are white, listen to the podcast Nice White Parents.
Yep.
I think it's a perfect example of like, answering a question nobody asked, you know, writing a prescription for something that was not diagnosed, and the just white fudgery. And I think it's like you can look around your community and see where you've participated in that, like whether or not it was intentional, like the sort of messages that you send to other people, that you send to yourself, that you send to your kids. And our move, we did move to a red state. We moved to a blue area in a red state. And my husband and I are like, you know what we really love about our neighborhood? We love that our neighborhood is filled with all different kinds of people. Golden Valley, Minnesota was not. No, it was not. No, it was not. No, 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 no. And we love that there's, like, we live next to apartment buildings. We love that we live next to, you know, all, like, short-term apartment buildings, and that we live next to, you know, old houses and new houses and all kinds of people. We love that on Saturday, people are walking to shul. We love that our I don't know. I just love how different things are. And we send our kids to, and this is like controversial. It's controversial. People get very, very keyed up about their kids and where they go to school. I know my kids are four white kids with two parents in an upper middle class household. They can go to the public school that's rated a three. They're fine. Okay. They're fine. And I think it'll be good for them. And that is what I am doing for the world. Now, could my children also go to a Montessori, you know, charter school on the other side of town that is in a very, very low income neighborhood, but where all the kids are from high income areas? They could. They could. They're going to our neighborhood school. They're walking there every day. I don't know what that has to do with anything except that, like, hold on a minute. It's going to connect back. It's going to connect back.
I believe in you, Laura.
It connects back to nice white parents. It connects back to, like, the ways that, you know, I've had these conversations with, you know, my mother too, which is like, okay, but, like, look at where I grew up. Look at who we spent all our time with. Like, I don't know, like, you know what you know. And the messages that I got were that, like, the world is white. Because my world was until high school.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, this is when, you know, we talk about, I have a sticker right up on my wall that reminds me, it says fighting racism is biblical. And it's got, just to remind myself when people start being like, you know, push back, that I have this reminder, like, you're doing this. This is the right thing. This is what God wants us to be doing. And it's all over scripture. But one of the main arguments I think people use to talk about doing these small steps and to think about equity versus anything else is to say, what does it mean to love my neighbor as myself, right? Like, this is a part of our like core belief as people of faith, is that we love God and we love others as ourself. But if you only see your neighbor as a person that looks just like you, that becomes really hard to widen your scope of what equity and equality look like. If your neighborhood and the people you interact with and the friends you contact and hang out with on the regular basis and, like, your bubbles, we talk about, like, you know, particularly now in a pandemic, like, who is in your bubble? Who are the people you've, like, stay connected with the most, and who are the people you, like, make sure you don't connect with? And it's like, maybe not make sure, maybe just like you are. Jesse's laughing. But maybe not intentional, but boy, you should take a, you know, again, put that snake up on a staff and look at it and see what the heck is killing you. And, like, and part of this is saying, like, who is my neighbor? And I just remember, to tell a quick story, and then I know Jesse's probably got to get going because he's always
no, so busy, I'm good but, today, actually.
What?
But I do, because I haven't showered.
You weren't even planning on showering until today.
I was going to, only because my hair is so dirty.
Sorry, and itches. I'll keep going.
No, it's okay. When we were helping, when my congregation partnered with the congregation here in South Minneapolis to help serve and process donations and help hand out donations, and, like, they just needed bodies. They were like, we just need people who are not here traumatized or struggling or whatever. And I was like, I got a bunch of suburban folks that are willing to come and help. We'll help. And so we were coming in, and I had complaints from my people saying, but we need to be helping our actual neighbors. And what they meant was, like, we don't want to go serve over there. We should be serving right here where we live. And I'm like, okay, so let's talk about what a neighbor is, right? Like, what is a neighbor, and who is that? Is it actually the person who lives next door to you, or is it, like, bigger than that or broader than that? And can it be? And And can you, if all your neighbors are white upper middle class people, then you're going to say, I want to help those people. They're not my neighbor. They're those people. Mm-hmm. Right. And so how we think about who our neighbor is and what that means, the call to take care of our neighbor actually means for people of faith. It doesn't just mean like, oh, treat others like you want to be treated. It's like, no, who are you surrounding yourself with? And how do you take care of people who are your neighbor? And I think that means you take a microscope to, or a magnifying glass to, what the word neighbor means for you. And like, really spend some time thinking about that, you know, who are my neighbors? And sometimes, I mean, I know I'm guilty of this as well. You're like, I have neighbors who are not white. And I'm like, because their name's not Joan, I like can never remember their damn name. And I'm like, I'm the worst. I need to write it down. I'm a white lady who can't remember a foreign sounding name. I'm the worst. Like, I just, you know, I'm like, then write it down, Natalia, do what you can. Cause they're, you know, it's like,
we'll see when I moved your name, a map.
And my name is Natalia. Everything. Like, I should talk, whatever.
I know. It'd be like, hey, Natalie, when I moved, I did make a map. I wrote down everybody's name that I met. Like, I would go home immediately and write their name on the map so that I knew like who they were.
Yeah. So the connection to that, the neighboring thing, that's what I have. Oh, man. So selfishly, I am taking that model and implementing it into Still Kicking. But even before that, the test run has been with the church that I attend, with the Sanctuary Covenant Church. I lead our neighboring efforts. And so we intentionally stopped calling outreach. Nora had to go.
We just lost Nora.
She was like, I'm out.
That happened with Emmy, but at least Nora wasn't saying something controversial and then kicked her off the podcast.
But we took the outreach name and stopped using it and called it neighboring because of that. Like, how do we actually be good neighbors in proximity to the community that we live in? And what does that really look like? And so it's caused us to continually question and go over and over, like, what does being a good neighbor look like? Who are our neighbors? As far as a congregation that we attend, because everybody doesn't live in the same neighborhood where the church is located. How do you be a good neighbor to your neighbors, your actual proximity neighbors? And then you're still a part of this church. So how are you being a good neighbor, even though you don't have the proximity and the closeness? Man, it has blown people away. It's bothered folks, but I think it has put us in a position where people genuinely are like, wow, they're here, they get it, or they're working to get it. And it creates the connection, which is where it's like, that's where you have to make it personal. You have to figure out how to be connected. And so we're continuing to dive into that. And I feel like that's where you're great at, I am, Nori, is creating community, like this community, to be able to say, hey, here's what I can do, here's how I can get engaged, and then here are more questions, because nobody ever arrives at this destination. It's constantly a journey. So,
yeah. And that, Jesse, oh my gosh, I love renaming outreach to neighboring. That's amazing. What a great, woo. I'm here for that.
Oh, Nora said she accidentally closed the window, but Ralph also needs school help. So bye. Bye, everyone.
Okay. Well, bye, everyone, for Nora. And I guess this is a good place to stop. I mean, obviously, this is an ongoing conversation. It's not just this one. And we have, obviously, a lot of thoughts, and things will keep coming out, and we'll keep talking about stuff as it happens. But I also, I'm just so thankful for this community who's been waiting for, I mean, they're like, I can't wait to hear from, you know, I can't wait to hear from you guys about what's going on. And I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, like, are you sure you're ready for us? but also just a reminder that if you have questions or comments, or you want to hear more about any of this, you know, our DMs are open, right? Like, you can message Jesse, you can message me, you can message Nora, and, you know, join conversations over on our Facebook group. I'm not there very much right now because Facebook, I cannot, but, the group has been having just a really lovely and active presence over there talking through things. So feel free to join our Facebook group and have some conversation about this episode or about what's going on and what you think you can do, what things you might commit to doing in the next couple weeks. Like, this is short term for now. And then, like, what things are you going to commit to doing over more than just that initial run in to try to help? Like, how are you going to sit back and how are you going to learn and how are you going to use the gifts you've been given to really make an actual lasting difference in the world? So go over there and find us all on all the things. CafeteriaChristian@gmail.com is how you can email us. You can find Cafeteria Christian on Instagram as well. And then all of us, me and Jesse and Nora and Emmy, are all on those things as well. And you can just do your work to try to find us, because it's not that hard. You can find us. I'm not going to give you all the things. It's fine. It's too many. So this has been kind of a long episode, but it was time. It was time. We needed it. So thanks for being with us today, everybody.
We're like right at an hour, though.
Yeah, that's okay. Good. It's good. With life, with faith, with politics, with not everything, as we've learned. Like, we're just going to leave, you know, white supremacy and nationalism behind. But with other things, many things, not all the things. Do what we do here at Cafeteria Christian and take what you like.
Leave the rest.
Bye. Bye, everybody.